PR.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you for being here with me tonight. Hope you had a good holiday weekend. Hope it was safe, fun, relaxing, all the things it should be. Well, coming up on the show, we've got some news. The Catskills Community Land Trust is hoping to bring an affordable, energy-efficient rental home to Livingston Manor. It'd be the first of several homes built by and for the community using local resources. Kimberly Izar has that report coming up in just a few minutes. And Shadowland Stages in Ellenville kicks off its 40th anniversary season with the Broadway comedy I'm Not Rappaport. It'll be starring Tony Award winner Judd Hirsch. Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio talks with Shadowland's artistic director Brendan Burke for all the details. That'll be in the second half of the program. But first up, we do have news from New York State, where a 15-year-old was arrested yesterday after a police chase that started in New York City reached speeds up to 130 miles per hour and ended in Westchester County after what authorities called a chain reaction crash injured 16 people. Times Union Hudson Valley reports the early morning chase started shortly after 2 a.m. Monday morning, when New York Police Department dispatchers reported that an erratic vehicle fled from officers in the Bronx and was traveling north on Interstate 95 in Westchester County. A Rye police officer on I-95 tried to slow traffic ahead of the pursuit at Exit 19 near Rye Playland. Police said the fleeing car then collided with three other vehicles that were carrying a total of 11 people. This chain reaction crash sent 16 people to the hospital in total. The unnamed minor alleged to be driving was charged with fleeing police, reckless driving, second-degree reckless endangerment, 15 counts of third-degree assault, and 3 counts of fourth-degree criminal mischief. This according to a state police statement. The driver, his 4 passengers, and 11 others were injured in the pursuit and received medical evaluations and were released from area hospitals. State Police spokesperson Sergeant Jack Keller said the chase fell within the agency's vehicle pursuit policies based on a preliminary review. The Times Union points out police pursuits are not governed by any national standards and that New York laws give officers broad discretion to chase a fleeing vehicle. The Times Union also cites a nationwide investigation last year that found that police pursuits claim nearly 2 lives a day in recent years, with most victims being bystanders and passengers, not the fleeing drivers. We hope to get more details, especially on that angle to this story, in just 2 days when Philip Pantuso of the Times Union joins us here on this show. Philip Pantuso of the Times Union, Hudson Valley. Well, in Albany, state legislators say New York's laws make it too difficult for natural hairstylists, often African Americans and African immigrants, to obtain a license. As Jung Yoon Hong from New York Public News Network reports, some lawmakers want to change that policy.
Under New York state law, stylists have to take 1,000 hours of classes and pass a test to become a hairstylist. The requirement for natural hairstyling, which includes hair braiding, weaving, and other styles often worn by people of African descent, is lower at 300 hours of classes. Individuals also have to pass a test conducted in English. But State Senator Cordell Clear wants to reduce the amount of required instruction for natural hairstyling to 40 hours and let people take exams in more languages besides English. Clear says these hairstylists have spent their whole lives honing the craft at their homes because in the past, there were few businesses in the state that specialized in natural hair styling.
It's ironic that government would say, oh, now here we are, the experts, with the people who've been doing this generationally. All we're there for is to make sure that they're able to do it in a safe, in a clean manner. This is a lot we're adding to something that we don't have to.
New York passed a law at the end of 2023 that requires all cosmetology schools in the state to include textured hair education as part of their curriculum. In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
In other New York legislative news, lawmakers want to prevent deportation flights from the state's airports. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind has more.
Democrats in the state legislature say airports should shun airlines that work with federal immigration authorities. A new bill would restrict public airports from contracting with any air carrier which has a deal with ICE, unless the carrier makes sure anyone being deported has had due process. Assemblymember Mikhail Solage says the state is doing what it can.
New York has the right to defend itself against the erosion of constitutional rights, against the misuse of state resources, and against the idea that due process is optional.
Solage and other lawmakers called out Avelo Airlines, which has a contract with ICE. The company said it would monitor the bill and previously said deportation flights provide stability for its bottom line. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Well, thank you to Jimmy, Jung-Yoon, and the New York Public News Network for those reports. Now on to Livingston Manor, where the Catskills Community Land Trust is hoping to build an affordable, energy-efficient rental home with local labor and resources. Since the 1960s, community land trusts have become a tool to build a shared equity and preserve affordable housing, farmland, and waterways. There are more than 220 land trusts in the United States, including dozens in New York State. Radio Catskills' Kimberly Izar spoke to the Catskills Community Land Trust Advisory Committee members Gwen Chance and Bruce Pollack about building its first two-family affordable home in Sullivan County.
Gwen and Bruce, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kim.
Oh, thanks for having us.
So let's start with the basics. What is a community land trust, or CLT for short, and how would it work in Livingston Manor?
So a community land trust is based on this model of shared equity, where the idea is that land or other assets are owned and shared collectively by people who live in an area. So you could have a park maybe that's not owned by the government, but if it's owned by a nonprofit organization, that could be seen as like a collective asset that's open to the public and it's there to benefit the community. The Catskills Community Land Trust is a nonprofit organization, and our goal is to acquire land and develop housing that we can hold on to for the community and keep at an affordable rate. So primarily, we'll be working with rentals, with apartments that will be affordable to people making a middle income in our area. And I'll define affordable housing in this case as housing that costs less than 30% of your income if you're making a living wage, a working wage in this area.
And the project that you're currently working on, can you tell me a little bit more about what that could possibly look like? What are you proposing?
Well, the town of we're working with the town of Rockland, and they've identified a lot in the village that's what's the size, quarter acre?
Yeah, it's about a quarter acre.
Yeah, and they're going to sell that to us at a fairly reasonable rate, and we'll be able to do our first project there. But as far as the actual structures, we've zeroed in on an idea of using timber frames because we can source the lumber locally for the timber. We have people in the area that know how to harvest trees. We have people in the area that know how to mill the trees. And we have people that know how to stand up. It's basically a barn frame. It's the same construction method that has been used for all those old barns that you see.
Yeah, I think the proposal is especially unique because its focus is on housing local families, but also fostering local in terms of utilizing actual local resources, like you described. I think another thing I think is interesting is just the timing of bringing a community land trust to the Catskills. It feels especially urgent right now. I was looking at some of the data from the Pattern for Progress. They just released some new housing data this week that shows that the inventory of homes for sale in Sullivan County has dropped 70% in the last 6 years, from 2019 to 2025, which is such a substantial decrease. And I'm curious from your perspectives why it's so important to build affordable housing right now in the region and how you define affordable housing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a national problem, right? Everyone's heard about the housing crisis nationally, and this is a state priority for the state government. The county, Sullivan County government, is really prioritizing promoting more affordable housing development. And it's something that locally on the municipal level in the town of Rockland, the town leadership is really pushing for. And they've recently signed up for the New York State Pro Housing Community Program. So like Bruce said, we've been working closely with the town government to try to develop a model that'll work for our town. And all of these towns are unique, but what we see over and over again in the Catskills are these small villages and hamlets in river valleys with steep slopes. And so we don't have big open spaces, particularly on water and sewer systems, where we can build homes. So we're really looking to build small developments, maybe one or two houses here or there, and ideally eventually renovating some of the condemned or substandard homes in our communities as well. So we have a lot of opportunities to solve this problem, and we're eager to be working with state and county sources and even federal sources for funding and other programs that can help us get this done. But what we're realizing, and what Bruce and I and our fellow volunteers at the Catskill Community Trust, Land Trust are doing, is realizing that nobody's going to come in here and solve this problem for us. It's really up to the local community to step up and get some houses built. And for-profit developers can't afford to do this. So we're doing it as a nonprofit organization. And our hope is to take donations and grant money and put it to work for our local community.
I think anybody that's been paying attention has to realize that the home prices and even the rents are out of reach of most people now. This area, Sullivan County in general, suffers from a three. We've got a triple whammy going on. We're very close to New York City. We have been discovered as a great place for second home ownership, and the Airbnbs have jumped in addition to all of that. So one thing, I'm partially, I blame myself because I participated in some of that activity. I've rehabbed two homes and sold them to people from the city, and I've built a new home and sold it to someone from the city. So not that I'm guilt-ridden. I'm right. Just saying that I need to do something to help fix this.
Yeah. Where are you guys now in terms of bringing the pilot home to life?
So right now we're raising money for this land purchase. We need to raise $18,000 to buy the land from the town of Rockland. And we feel good about buying the land from the town because we know that that money is going right into the town coffers, and it will be used by the town government in responsible ways. And then once we acquire the land, we will begin fundraising and organizing for the next phase, which is actual construction. And one of the most exciting parts of this project, aside from sourcing local materials like local timber, is that we're going to be building one of the greenest houses in town. It will be a really tight house, really beautifully built, very strong. It'll last for 100 years or more, built like an old barn, just like Bruce said. But it will also use some really modern technologies in terms of insulation and windows and electric heating. And so it will be a really cozy, green, energy-efficient house with great air quality, and it'll be a really high standard of living for the people who live there. Mm-hmm. Wow. And while we build it, we'll be working with Sullivan BOCES to take on the construction. So we'll be educating young people on how to build a house like this. What are the cutting-edge green technologies at our disposal?
Mm-hmm. For those that don't know what BOCES is a trade school, a local trade school.
Right.
And so we're hoping to help train the next generation of construction workers in the area.
That's incredible. And I think the way that you describe the home, it sounds like a dream. I'm like, when can I move in? That makes me think of one question around eligibility. You talked about how you define affordable housing. What would the process be for someone moving in?
That's a good question. We're not really sure yet, because if we acquire grant funding from certain sources, we might be required to follow their guidelines on how we can advertise and rent out the home. If all of our money is privately sourced, and as in if everyone just donates a little bit and we are able to raise that money independent of major grant programs, then we can have a lot more flexibility with how we rent it out. But what we do know is that at least one of the apartments will be rented at an affordable rate, so 30% of monthly income, to a low-income household. And low-income just means a family that's making less than 60% of area median income. And then the second apartment will be rented to a family making a moderate income, ideally. So you'll have kind of a mixed-income community where you have a lower-income family living next door to a more middle class family. And the idea is not to create neighborhoods where everybody is in one class. We're hoping that we maintain this wonderful aspect of our community in Livingston Manor, where we have people who make all sorts of different levels of income living side by side. And that type of economic diversity and class diversity is really one of the great things about Livingston Manor. So we want to build on that and maintain it as we move forward.
Very exciting stuff in the works. I'm curious, how can people stay plugged in or get involved with the project potentially?
Well, we do have a website. It's Catskills Community Land Trust, CatskillsCLT.org. So you can find us online. We just started an Instagram page, so you can also find us at Catskills Community Land Trust. We'd love to hear from everybody. We're always looking to add to our advisory committee. We're looking for local talent. There's six of us now who are organizing this, and we have a great group who are leading the charge. But it really takes a village, so everyone is welcome. And we thank you so much, Kim, for giving us this opportunity today.
Thank you, Kim.
Of course. I've been chatting with Gwen Chance and Bruce Pollock, advisory members of the Catskills Community Land Trust. Bruce and Gwen, thanks so much for chatting, and I'm really looking forward to seeing this project evolve.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dolp. Well, Shadowland Stages in Ellenville is celebrating a major milestone, its 40th anniversary season, and they're kicking it off with a production of Herb Gardner's classic Broadway comedy, I'm Not Rappaport. It'll be starring Tony Award winner Judd Hirsch, and it's directed by Tony nominee Neil Pepe. To find out more about the play and the legacy of the theater, Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio spoke with Shadowland's artistic director, Brendan Burke.
So let's talk about the 40th anniversary. What made Shadowland choose I Am Not Rappaport to open Shadowland's 40th anniversary season?
The biggest thing, we wanted to kick off our birthday year with a big project. And Judd and I had spoken probably for about a year about putting this production together. And it was something, it was an ambition he had to do it, and we eventually looped in Neil Pepe, and who was available at this time. We're a relatively small theater, and this is a big project for us. It's got a huge set. Actually, we're doubling the amount of lighting we have in the building to do the lights for it. And Ken Posner, who's a multiple Tony Award-winning lighting designer, is on the team to design the show. He designed, among other shows, Wicked on Broadway. Mm. So to have that kind of talent in our little space, it's just a fantastic opportunity. But we also, there's a cool coincidence. So Shadowland was started in 1985 when a group of young actors came up from the city. They threw a little bit of money in the pot, put a down payment on the building, which was an old movie theater in disrepair. And they started producing in 1985. They did a season of about three or four shows for profit and went out of business almost immediately. But the community was hooked, created a not-for-profit board of directors, and we exist as the extension of those efforts. 1985 was also the year that I'm Not Rappaport premiered on Broadway, with Judd playing the role he'll be playing, and he won the Tony Award for it. So it just kind of all seemed a little bit like kismet, and we're just thrilled to put this kind of like dream team together for this project, as much to celebrate our birthday as it is a gift to, you know, the community and audience and donors who support our efforts.
For those who may not know the play or have seen the movie, how would you describe the heart of this story, I Am Not Rappaport?
It's a very human play. We just finished our first week of rehearsals and sitting in and watching Judd and his co-star, Eugene Lee, who's just an amazing actor. The human aspect of the story shines through in this production, which is just a wonderful thing. It's a comedy, but there's such a humanity to it. And watching these two masters of their craft go head to head in this, it really is a joy in the rehearsal room every day. But it's a story about, I think you described it well, a little bit about resistance and aging, and a little bit about how we treat the elderly. But it's a story of two guys who meet on a bench in Central Park. And one is this raconteur, they're both in their 80s. One's a raconteur who you're never quite sure if you're hearing truth or falsehood from him. And the other one, and he's kind of hiding away from his daughter, who's concerned about him and wants to put him in essentially like an old age home and a home for elderly. And then Midge, the other character, he's been working as a kind of a building super in the overnight for 40 or 50 years. And the tenants committee is trying to chase him down to let him go. They're going to renovate the building, and he's part of the things that they want to renovate. And so he's hiding out to avoid that conversation too. So it's about two guys resisting efforts from the influences in their lives to put them to pasture. They go through that, retain their dignity. And so there's a little bit of message to it, but such a humanity with these two performances. Above all, it's a comedy. It's a lot of fun. It's going to be a real pleasure to watch.
Yeah. So you would say that cast the characters are sort of holding on to control of their lives because they're sort of other folks are trying to dictate what they should do with their last years.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And at the same time, they are also aware of that they are aging and coming to face to face with that reality as well. Yeah. It's a wonderful play.
You talk about this relationship between the two characters, Nate and Midge. Why do you think their friendship resonates so deeply with the audience through the years?
I think like in all things that we find funny or affecting to us, it's elements of truth. And it's the general and the specific, like I don't see myself necessarily in the specificity of these two characters, but I recognize the general truth of it. And both of these are two actors who work really specifically and work off of each other in such honesty. You see these moments of truth, you recognize it and you're sucked in immediately. So you get a great sense of empathy for the characters and their situation. And then great pleasure and joy in the funny moments, the little bits of behavior that occur out of that conversation and that situation.
Yep.
And it's a pleasure to go to rehearsal every day. It's a little bit of a master class in watching two guys who've been doing it for a long time, experts in their fields. It's a privilege to be in the room every day.
What do you know, Judd Hirsch, like you mentioned, was SS Nat in 85. You know, how was it? How is it for him coming back to the role again? And do you know if he's going to take any different approach to the role?
Great question. Yeah, he did it in 85. So when he was 50 years old, he was playing this character of Nat, who's 80. And then he did it again 20 years later when he was 70. And then I think, you know, Herb Gardner, the playwright, was Judd's best friend, as Judd said. And out of all the plays that Herb wrote, Judd did most of them, starred most in most of them. And he has such a, I think this is a special project because Herb's passed away. And so this is a special project for Judd to revisit not just the play and its themes, but his relationship and history with Herb. And I think that's probably the biggest difference other than finding all those lines he tucked away in his memory from years ago. He probably done 1,000 performances in the show, but not in the last time he did this 20 years ago. But I think it's this kind of a honorific way that Judd is approaching this particular project.
Yeah. Now, what do you hope audiences walk away with thinking or feeling after this show? Obviously, we can't control their emotions, but what are your hopes for it?
First off, I hope they have a great time. It's a funny play. And then it's just the theater can just provoke thoughts or issues and truths. And that may or may not affect your behavior, but if it just puts things in the forefront of your mind. And this, it's about how we treat our aging in the country and what we do as folks who are all aging as we look towards that last section of our time on Earth. What are we going to do about that with regards to our own ambitions and relationships? It'll have you thinking about the concept of aging.
Yeah. And I can see how different people can relate to the story, either folks who have loved ones who are aging and trying to decide what's the best for them as they age, or ourselves who are maybe close to that age, contemplating what life can be like at that time.
Yep.
Yeah. Shadowlands celebrating 40 years. You mentioned how important this place is for the town of Ellenville, for the village of Ellenville. How has Shadowlands evolved over the decades and where do you see it heading next?
Oh, that's a really, really cool question. So I've been artistic director for 20 years, but my relationship goes back probably another 10, just as coming up as an actor from the city to do a show. And then I would come up every summer and direct or act in a show. And so I've got to watch its growth over the years. and its impact on the community. When I started as artistic director 20 years ago, one restaurant had just opened on the block. And now, you know, there's a sign at the edge of the corner that says, you know, with an arrow saying Restaurant Row or in Theater District. So I can speak for hours on the artistic impact and cultural impact on the community, education impact for our education program. But there are times like now when places like the NEA are under threat. It's so important to remember that an investment in the arts is not an extravagance. Its cultural impact alone makes it not an extravagant, but more importantly, for folks who live by the numbers, it's an economic investment. And I always like to say a dollar to the arts gets you $1.50 back. And we've seen what the presence of Shadowland has been able to do to the economy of Ellenville down in the, down on Canal Street with, there are now shops and restaurants, and we've created A jobs in our organization as well, but secondary, tertiary jobs through restaurants and shops. And we're going to be bringing this year almost 1,000 people a weekend, probably for this show, to a village of 4,000. And they're going to come and they're going to eat meals and they're going to spend money. And that's going to be an impact financially in our community that's so important. As we look at the times right now, when funding for the NEA is cut, it's short-sighted because the arts are an economic investment. Art money makes money. And that's one of the things that I've been thrilled to watch over the years here. As an organization, we used our pandemic time when we were closed to kind of do a strategic plan to look at our organization and see how, what are we going to do in the next 10 to 15 years to what are our values, what are our priorities. And so in addition to continuing to grow our main stage programming and our efforts in our education program, looking at more secondary and other offerings. So we've made an investment in the building to start doing more music and concerts, exploring options with film, and keeping community as a priority in our mind. How are we making sure we're accessible to everyone in the community, growing our community throughout the Hudson Valley with our impact of our shows, and investing in new plays?
Yeah, I think it's very well said. Like I said, I will agree with you that as towns and villages prosper and grow, to me, always the arts are always behind it. Like when you have a hub like Shadowland is, and you have, like I said, the restaurants are become filled with people coming to see the show, and you have more and more things coming to Ellenville. Like having opening up as soon as the Borschtbelt Museum, so there's more things to go and see and partake in Ellenville.
We partner with the Borschtbelt Museum is a great example. We partner with them, and I know, I think we have a monthly comedy in our, we built a second theater. So we have our studio stages around the block from our main stage. And we, once a month, we partner with the Borschtbelt Museum and do a comedy, turn it into the Borschtbelt Comedy Club. And partnering with other community organizations is just a way that we can tie in more with our community, not just specifically on the Warsing, but also Ulster County, the Catskills region.
So if people listening to this and they want tickets, where can they go to get tickets and information?
Easiest way is to go to shadowlandstages.org. And that's a 24/7 time to buy tickets and subscriptions. We do producing a 7-show season. And if you buy the whole package of over 20% regular ticket prices, it's a great deal for folks who want to support Shadowland, and a great deal for the consumer. And also you can do it by phone. You've heard the phone ring a few times during this interview. It's been a busy time, but we're not even open. It's actually Tuesdays through Saturdays, noon to five. You can call 845-647-5511 to purchase tickets through a live human as well.
We're talking to Brendan Burke, Artistic Director for Shadowland Stages, talking about I Am Not Rappaport opening up on May 30th at Shadowland. Brendan, thank you so much for talking to us. I do really appreciate it. And break a leg.
I appreciate it. I really appreciate the time and the thoughtful interview. Thanks, Patricio.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio, for that report. Well, and thank you for listening to the Local Edition tonight, but that's it for our program. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. I'll be back tomorrow night, and we'll do it again. And just a public service announcement reminder, it might feel like Monday to you today, and it might not, but it is definitely Tuesday. That means Mr. Kusar Grace is on his way to do the Music Emporium, kicking off a great music lineup this evening at 7 o'clock. But before that, don't go anywhere. We've got more news next with The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Grizzly Bagels, small-batch handmade New York-style bagels in Roscoe, New York, grizzlybagels.com, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.